All right, welcome in to the bullpen here on Aggie Radio, KBLU 92.3, Logan, Utah, as you just heard our station identification. We're super excited about that. Today is, today the main course of the show will be about a very serious topic, and that is, of course, sexual assault. But before that, we want to do some lighthearted stuff beforehand and also get you some news before we jump into that. But I will mention that we are going to have Tommy Sorensen. I never know exactly what to call him, but Tommy Sorensen, he's the managing editor for the Statesman. So, and he's going to be coming in to talk with us and kind of tell us what the Statesman has so far about the allegations against Torrey Greene, a former USU football player, and four different complaints about, you know, him sexually assaulting, you know, different people here in Logan, three students and one who isn't a student but like was living here. But we'll talk about that and have them come in, and that'll be around 9:30. But in the meantime, like, we will have, you know, a couple of things that we do every week, and then after that we will talk about sexual assault as a whole. Then we'll get specifically talking about that instance, and then afterwards towards the end of the show, we will talk about ways that you can get help if you or anyone that you know has been a victim of that, and kind of like some signs and stuff like that. So make sure you listen to the entire show because it's an important thing anyway. But we're going to start out doing some news. Some big news came out. It might have happened yesterday, but I didn't see it until this morning. But Russell Westbrook signed an extension with the Oklahoma City Thunder, which a lot of people thought that because Durant had left that he was just gone, like it was game over for them. But he has signed an extension with them. It's a 3-year extension on top of the year he still has, so now he's still going to be there for a little while. He does have a player option at the end of it. But exciting news for Oklahoma City because they aren't going to lose Russell like they lost Kevin Durant. And so, I mean, we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, I guess he still could get traded, but it's not as likely at this point.
Yeah, I think that came out yesterday because I remember seeing that. He had very positive words to say about the Oklahoma City organization. Seems like he really wants to, at least for the time being, continue playing there. He thinks that's his best option. So it seems like they're... You know, he's going to be their centerpiece, obviously, now that Kevin Durant is gone.
And so. Oh, yeah, for sure. And even at times when Kevin Durant was injured, he was the centerpiece. And he did fine carrying the team. Like, at times it even felt like the team worked better when they weren't both on the court. Obviously, Kevin Durant is a great player, one of the best in the league. But as far as him playing with Russell Westbrook, like, they got along and they did pretty well, but at times it felt like... Russell Westbrook was a much better player when he didn't have to worry about deferring to Kevin Durant ever. And we'll see how it goes this year. I mean, this is going to be the first time that you have like a full season where Kevin Durant won't be with that. So,
yeah, I mean, what do you think about their playoff or chances or whatever looks, what's it going to look like for them down the road?
I think that they'll still be a playoff team because Russell Westbrook is really good. They also have a lot of good players around them, which was part of why I was really surprised that Durant left, because they had a lot of good players and they added a couple more before the free agency period, and Oladipo was the main one. But he's an up and coming good 2 guard, and yeah, you know, I was like, that adds them more weapons on the perimeter especially. And they also added Sabonis and Ilyasova, that's how you say the name. And Ilyasova, he's a solid role player. That might have just been part of a financial thing. I don't expect him to have a huge impact, but he's a decent player, so he's not really going to hurt them per se. And with Sabonis, like, he was quite a good player at Gonzaga, But that doesn't always transition to the NBA, we know that. But I think that he's one that it would be good to take a chance on because he does a good job of rebounding the ball and playing defense. He can also kind of be a stretch four. So he's a good player, and I think that they did a great job of on that trade for Ibaka, where they traded Ibaka to the Magic. Because to me, Ibaka kind of had outlived his time there in Oklahoma City, and he wasn't really having much of an impact because they had other guys that worked better with their system. Ibaka didn't do much like last season. So I thought that Oklahoma City kind of fleeced them on that one. They got a really good deal. And so I was surprised when Durant left. But, you know, at this point, they still have a lot of good pieces in play. They obviously won't be as good without Kevin Durant.
So no fifth Western Conference final series for them coming up?
No, I really doubt it. It is possible. I can't rule it out because you never know how a season goes. And Russell Westbrook could just transcend everything this year. You never know. I don't see that happening, though. I feel like they're going to be maybe like a seventh or eighth seed in the playoffs. And they're going to be behind the Jazz, I believe. I think the Jazz have a better core that's going to be a better team overall throughout the year. And, yeah, so I don't think they get to the Western Conference Finals. And I think that they don't win their division this year. But they're still going to be a solid team and a team that could sneak up on people as well. Because some people will start to not I guess it's not that they won't respect him, but they won't worry about them as much without Kevin Durant. And I think that they'll be able to sneak up on some people because of that, because they are still a good team, even if they aren't quite as good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
In other news, we had the baseball trade deadline was last week, right?
Yeah, well, kind of while I was gone, but was able to monitor it, you know, kind of check in on it. But crazy year. Lots of big names getting tossed around. Some of the winners, in my opinion, this year, Rangers and Cubs. Rangers, I think, probably sealing the deal on the AL West this year with Carlos Beltran and another acquisition from the Yankees. Cubs getting Aroldis Chapman to bolster their struggling bullpen, which I think was a key thing for them to carry them into the postseason.
And that guy throws fire.
Yeah, his 100. Average is like 100.
Yeah, he throws over 100 every time, just about. So
it's as a crazy batter, I would be scared. Like, I would just be terrified.
Just imagine how fast that is.
And if that hits you, you know, it's, that's terrifying enough. But so those are the two big winners.
I would also say the Indians were a big winner, too. I mean, they did miss out on Luke Roy, but they were able to get Andre Miller. I think it's not Andre Miller. Andre something Miller.
Yeah. But anyway.
Andre Miller is a basketball player, so that's why I had the wrong name. Maybe he has the same name. I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But
yeah.
Anyway, they got their closer Miller. It was another closer from the Yankees. And we already mentioned Beltran from the Yankees.
Yeah. Chapman came from the Yankees.
Chapman from the Yankees.
Yeah, and so that brings up, you know, Yankees, I think, along with the Padres, just one of those teams dumping everything that it's time to rebuild. And with the Yankees, it makes sense, though, because they paid a lot of money for some aging stars. Granted, it's the Yankees, but I think this, from what I've read, Steinbrenner kind of went against the advice of his own GM in getting some guy and giving an extension to guys like A-Rod, and who by the way, will probably, it's not an if, but when the Yankees get rid of A-Rod at this point.
Because he's not doing much of anything for them at this point.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing that, I mean, you never see the Yankees selling. They're always trying to get to the playoffs and always trying to do stuff. So this is the first time, I think, ever that the Yankees have been like, we're not going to make the playoffs. We're going to rebuild a little bit.
Yeah, this is basically saying we're done, you know.
Yeah, and that never happens. Never. And for it to happen this year is crazy, first off. But it was the right decision for them because they weren't going to make the playoffs. They're going to
a lot of money. They're
hang around in mediocrity for a while. But they traded away these good assets that they got a lot back from. They got a lot of prospects that they can use to develop in their farm system. And, you know, in a couple of years, they can be back competing for the World Series again.
Yeah.
But the way that they were going, if and especially if they decided they were going to be buyers, because there's always buyers and sellers at the NBA or the MLB trade deadline, and the buyers are always, you know, they spend a bunch on prospects and all and money in order to get guys who can help them, you know, make a push to win the World Series. Obviously, it only works for one team, and maybe even they didn't even have to do it. But then you have the other side. You have sellers who know that they're not going to win, and they accept that, and they're the ones who are selling, like, these players to other teams for their prospects that they're up-and-coming guys yeah. who are in the minor leagues most of the time. And they give them these good players for several players that are also good. And, you know, it's just how it works every year. And
yeah.
the Yankees are always on the buyer's side, or at the very least, they're never on the seller's side. They might stay pat.
Yeah, it's kind of a whole new territory for them.
Yeah.
But
it was the right decision, I think. And
Yeah, I mean, because these were guys kind of at the end. Except, I mean, Chapman's still really good, but, you know, A-Rod's getting to the end of his career. Carlos Beltran, I assume, is getting kind of toward the end of his career. He's still good, though, but...
And then Mark Teixeira announced, it was today that I saw it, that he's going to retire at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So that's another
big-name guys, but nobody from their glory days, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just – and I think it'll be good. Padres, though, they kind of just do this all the time. They just trade off some of their better players. So, I mean, it's not even really – it's not kind of a new strategy for them. But
no, not really.
Yeah, so kind of winners and losers. I think, although I will say the Houston Astros lost out in preparing to try and overtake the Rangers, because I think the Rangers have probably sealed the deal on the division now with some of their acquisitions.
Yeah.
So I would say the Houston Astros were probably the biggest losers of the trade deadline.
Yeah, and time will obviously tell. I mean, maybe some guys don't work out. I mean, you had Albert Pujols, who did so great in St. Louis for all that time, but he hasn't been nearly as effective in Los Angeles with the Angels. And the same with Josh Hamilton. He was with the Rangers before and after he went to the Angels. Like, he's been great. I don't know how he's been doing this year because I haven't followed him, but you know, as a whole, like, his body of work has been really good. And he went to the Angels, and he just couldn't get a break.
Yeah. And So sometimes, you know.
Sometimes it doesn't work out.
GM knows what they're doing. You know?
But from the outset, it looks like, I mean, there were some winners. I was excited because the Dodgers got a couple important, like, pieces that can help them going forward. They're kind of at a weird stage where, I mean, yeah, they're not, like, eliminated, I guess, from playoff contention. But they have a lot of work to do in order to really have a chance to win the World Series. Yeah. But they aren't far out of first place.
Yeah, and the Giants, you know, still struggling. I mean, they're not quite.
Definitely. Yeah. Before we move on to, well, Shane, do you have any other news that you feel like we need to bring up right now? I don't really have anything.
I think there were, no, I'll save that for the Wall of Shame, actually.
Okay.
So that'll be my third Wall of Shame.
Okay. Well, now, we go to our favorite segment of the day.
Shame.
All right. Wall of Shame, everybody. So basically, in the Wall of Shame, if you haven't heard before, is we basically, you know, go through instances of athletes or coaches that do something stupid, and we put them in the Wall of Shame. Some things I don't really... This is kind of more for fun. It's not meant to be, like, serious things most of the time. I mean, sometimes it gets a little bit more serious. But with regards to the situation with Torrey Greene, I'm not going to put him in the Wall of Shame just because I feel like that's a very serious thing. And although we are going to be talking about him, we're not going to be talking about him during this part. So
yeah. This is the redeemable shame part of her.
Most of the time, yeah.
Most of the time, this is a, you know, junior league shame.
Yeah, but anyway, since I just have one that's really important that I share, and I've wanted to share it for a while. So I think it was from last week. So I wasn't able to, or I guess maybe it wasn't from last week. Maybe it was from like early this week. Anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. But I'm gonna have you go first since you have multiple.
Okay. To start out, I've got Chris Sale of the Chicago White Sox going up on the Wall of Shame for a little jersey cutting incident. While we were gone. Or at least while I was gone over the past couple weeks.
Yeah, he definitely went on the Wall of Shame last week.
Okay, well. But
you can rehash it because, I mean.
Yeah, might as well.
It's still relevant.
Yeah, so throwback night at the White Sox. He didn't like the uniforms, said they were uncomfortable. And they wouldn't change the uniforms, obviously, because they'd been promoting this as a throwback night. So took a pair of scissors, apparently, and just went to town on the entire team's jersey. But I was thinking about that, and I was like, where is anybody else during that? Because those jerseys aren't paper, you know? You got to give a little bit of effort to cut them up. So somebody...
And that's the,
you know, the
I guess part of that
manager was gone for a while.
The thing is, they may have like been there, but apparently he was using a knife. So
okay.
That's a little bit more sketchy.
Probably not going to intervene on a guy with a knife. But,
so I mean, that may have been what happened is that people saw him doing it, but they saw he had a knife and they're like, well, to me, it's not worth it. So I'm not even going to bother. But yeah, so he was a bit out of control. I kind of thought he would get moved at the deadline, but he wasn't.
Yeah, there's all those.
They just really wanted a lot for him, and people weren't willing to do it because he does come with some baggage, with his anger management.
Yeah, just keep sharp objects away from him if you're in the locker room.
But congrats, Chris Sale. You found it worthy enough that both of you came. This or us? Okay, so. I got you. sorry, I was distracted by someone in the hall. Anyway. But yeah, congrats. You were good enough to make it into the Wall of Shame for both of us. Like, we both thought of it individually.
Independently,
exactly. And who else you got?
Couple, do you want to give yours? Because I've got two more.
All right, I'll give mine. So, this happened recently. Draymond Green, once again, you're heading into the Wall of Shame. Because you tend to do stupid things a lot.
This is like the
apparently.
All-star game of Wall of Hall of Shame today.
Okay. And I want to get in a little bit about, you know, this particular instance and then kind of why I guess I kind of have to. First off, Draymond Green recently had posted a picture of his... I'm trying to think of the most correct way to say this that doesn't come across as offensive. But anyway, I guess he posted what's known as a dick pic on his Snapchat story. And it was there for like 10 minutes before he took it down. And yeah, first off, don't post nude pictures of yourself on your story. I guess porn stars probably do it, but I mean, if when you're not trying to come across
the
as
the general respectable population, not so much.
Yeah, yeah. But when you're such a public person and lots of people are probably looking at your Snapchat story, yeah, definitely don't post that.
He an actor Orlando Bloom lately with the dick pics.
I didn't realize that Orlando Bloom did that. I didn't hear that, but I mean, we can talk about that in a second, but. And then he was just saying he was trying to send it as a private message, which, first off, you're like, who wants a dick pic?
Probably not his accountant getting that, I'm assuming.
Maybe. And I don't know what the situation there is, but I'm assuming that probably not. But yeah, so first off, I mean, don't post that to your social media. And if you accidentally do it because he said it was by accident that he went on his story, which I'm kind of hesitant to believe because I believe he understands how Snapchat works. And he would, like, you have the thing, like, you take the picture and then you have the ability to choose who you send it to, and you can put it on your story. And so, like, you have a screen that shows where it's going to go. maybe if it's something like that, you should probably double, triple check that it's not going on your story.
Or just not send it at all.
I mean, obviously, you shouldn't send it at all. But anyway, definitely not on your story. But yeah, for that, he's going into the wall of shame. But the thing about it is like that, I guess I'm kind of putting, I mean, I guess I'm not going to put them in the wall of shame, but I think that because of recent things that are going on with him, I don't think that he should have been allowed to be a part of the Olympic team, because I mean, this obviously happened after they were already gone and it's not really a huge deal, but when he was arrested for assaulting a Michigan State football player, that is very not cool.
Yeah.
And for him to do that really just, for me, says, you know, you shouldn't represent your country this time. Like, that doesn't mean never, but when you have that going on, you shouldn't be on the national team, I think.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's irreplaceable. He's a good player. But we've got lots of good players that could easily step in and take over.
Oh,
and so that happened well before they finalized the roster for the Olympics. And there's a lot of guys that they could have had go in his place.
So welcome back.
So
welcome back to the wall.
To me, I think that they shouldn't have done that. And yeah, so for that, he goes on the wall of shame.
Man, it's like All-Star week now.
All right, what else you got? Were you going to use him too?
No, actually. Number one of the last two. Number one, St. Louis Rams canceling their Legends game because of...
You mean Los Angeles Rams.
There we go. Whoopsies. Canceling their Legends game, due to poor ticket sales already. I mean, obviously, it's just kind of this weird alumni game, I guess. I don't know. But not a great start for the revamped L.A. Rams. So, they going on. And then number two, rumors, I'm not sure if it's finalized, but Chiefs looking to get Nick Foles from the Rams.
No, Nick Foles is a free agent now. So.
Oh, okay.
He got his release last week, I believe it was. But yeah, so he's a free agent. He has been in talks with the Cowboys, I know for sure. But I think it would be foolish. I mean, I guess they could be bringing him in as a backup, but... I know Nick Foles wants to start, but to me, Alex Smith is a better quarterback, obviously, and he does a great job, and it'd be dumb to bring him in unless they specifically told him, like, you're coming in as our backup.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it is. You're coming in as the backup. Don't expect us to give you the star treatment or anything. Obviously, if you are playing better than Alex Smith, then you'll earn the job, but, like, we're not bringing in... you in with the expectation that you're going to be the starting quarterback. So, so just make sure you know that.
Yeah. And I think that's what they were going for. Cause he's like 5 years younger than Alex Smith. And,
I think it's more, I think he's only 25 right now.
Yeah. So I think that's what the Chiefs were going for. I don't think they like got anywhere on it, but
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he had a great one season, you know, like a very phenomenal one season, but last year,
it was a creaky season.
Okay. Yeah, last year kind of a disaster. So Chiefs and their quarterback, whatever they're thinking about quarterbacks, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about him taking over for Alex Smith, because Alex Smith has done a great job for them and they love him there, so.
Yeah.
I don't believe that he would. I mean,
Finally, a stable quarterback since Trent Green for the Chiefs.
So anytime you bring up Alex Smith with the Chiefs fans, there's a lot of this going on. And it's lots of fun.
Finally a stable quarterback.
Yeah, because they kind of had some struggles for a while there. But anyway, did you have one more for the
Washington? No, that was it?
Okay. All right, so that was fun, and hopefully this works. We're going to do this. Close the door on the happy-go-lucky fun part of the show, and we're going to move on to something a bit more serious, and that, of course, is sexual assault, because we're going to mention briefly right now, but we're going to talk about more lately, but it came out yesterday that Tory Greene, who was one of our linebackers last year. He signed a free agent contract with the Falcons during this offseason. And then yesterday, they found out that the Falcons had cut him because they found out that he was under investigation for four separate sexual assault charges. And they, and to their credit, they did not want anything to do with that. And they shouldn't, because that is not acceptable, and they shouldn't promote it. I mean, if it comes back later that he is innocent, but it's hard to believe that he will, because these are four separate women who do not know each other. They each tell a similar story. Again, they don't know each other. When there's that many different counts, it's probably not some conspiracy.
Plus, the police think there's at least enough to look into it, which is a sign that something was brought to their attention that they thought was...
If somehow it does come back that he actually is innocent, then he should get another chance to try to do something. But it's hard to believe that would happen. But again, we're not going to dive into that specifically for a few minutes. I guess it won't be too long. But Tommy Sorensen, the managing editor of The Statesman, will be coming in to talk with us about what The Statesman has so far on the issue. And then we'll talk about a couple different articles that were written by the Salt Lake Tribune who kind of broke the story, and just kind of the situation as a whole. But really, sexual assault, obviously, most people should know what it is. Just going to pass over it a little bit. I mean, I guess people know what sexual assault is and rape is, although there have been different definitions that have kind of been expanded to include rape that aren't actually. But as far as actual rape and sexual assault is something that unfortunately happens way more than you would ever hope for. You would hope for it to never happen, but even you know it will happen, but you definitely don't want it to happen is nearly as much as it does. I mean, I'm kind of talking around in circles there.
Well, I mean, it's a devastating crime to be a victim of.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think it just destroys your world from what just from hearing the experiences of people who have been victims, it's just a earth-shattering thing to have happened to you, so.
Yeah. And that's everything I've seen as well. And unfortunately, it's been related to athletes for a lot more than you would ever hope, because unfortunately a lot of athletes do feel kind of entitled because of how good they are, and a lot of things are given to them, and some athletes take that into other areas of their life, and some of that is and makes them believe that it's okay and that they're entitled to be able to have sex with whoever they want. And that is a completely stupid line of thought. Like, you're not entitled to have sex with anybody you want, regardless of whether they want to or not. If they want to, whatever, fine. If they say no, that means no. And unfortunately, there have been a lot of examples in the past of, you know, athletes that have been involved in this. And there are examples that happen with that and domestic violence, which is related in my mind, in the NFL. I know they've been kind of harsh on it. Now, Ray Rice wasn't ever involved with a sexual assault that I'm aware of, but domestic violence, and because of, you know, the domestic violence that he perpetrated, he's not in the NFL. And he wants to be. Like, he said that he would donate his entire salary if he got to play for someone. But people don't want to touch him because that is something that is not okay and never will be. And for you to, I believe in second chances, but at the same time, it's not that, I never got the feeling that he ever felt that he was sorry for what he did. And we actually right now will have Tommy Sorensen. We're going to jump into the situation involving Torrey Greene at this point because we do have Tommy Sorensen here to talk about it. But basically, as I mentioned before, there were four separate accounts that were reported to police here in Logan that involved sexual assault involving one player, or it said one student. The initial report came out because they weren't going to release information on a crime that wasn't, you know, when there weren't charges brought up. And Tommy here has done some research a lot over the last night and this morning, and want to kind of get your perspective and all the details that you have about it so far.
Well, to clarify, I don't have a ton yet. Most of what I know is based on what the Tribune reported a couple weeks ago, which I'm assuming you've been talking about.
Touched on it. We didn't get too in-depth on it because I didn't want to, like, double go over things. So we do want to talk about what the Tribune has shared.
Okay. So as you just mentioned, there was four women who accused a specific individual of sexual assault. Three of them were students. The four all went to the Logan police. And then the three who were students also, through a circuitous route, I guess, ended up reporting it to the school. And then, as you mentioned it, the information came out yesterday that it was actually Torrey, former football player for the Aggies. So, there was a lot of reaction after the Tribune's initial report, the unnamed report, because there was like four independent accusations against this individual and no charges were filed. And the school also didn't proceed with any disciplinary action, right? The concern is, or I don't know if concern is the right word. What we're trying to do, so the Tribune has done their work to report on it, and they did put a lot of work into it. It's obviously, I mean, they requested the records and the comb through those and whatnot. From our perspective with the Statesman, which is looking into it, we're trying to, I guess, fact check is a way to put it. Like, we just want to make sure everything happened the way it's been reported. And part of the concern is that the way it was framed, it seems like there was a lot of negligence. A lot of people haven't been doing what they're supposed to, and that's possible. But there's also sometimes it's hard to actually do something, you know, from the police perspective, unless there's actually evidence, it's hard for them to put a case together.
Now, I don't know if we have any way of knowing this, but there, these women that came forward, was this all within the last, I don't know, like year?
He was here. Like about a year and a half.
It was a year and a half.
No, the four that came forward was between January and toward the end of November of 2015.
Okay.
The one of them went to the police. The first one in January went to the police, more or less immediately after, within a couple weeks of it happening. And the detective put together his case report and then handed it to the prosecutor, who looked over it and decided not to pursue it. See, again, that's a situation, like, it sounds like, it's like, whoa, why are they not doing that? There probably wasn't enough evidence. You know?
Yeah.
That's what, from the Statesman's perspective, that's what we're going to find out. We're going to go talk to them and ask. And so the files were, or the, it was dropped in April of last year.
Right.
And then there was another attack that occurred during the summer, and then two more during the fall semester. All three of them went to the police around November of last year, right? One of those three, the case was sent to the prosecutor. The other two, it was not, for varying reasons. One of them wasn't actually in Logan's jurisdiction. There's other reasons why it wasn't actually sent to the prosecutor. And then the one that was, prosecutor looked over it again, decided not to pursue it, and it was dropped in, I believe, January of this year, if I'm remembering correctly.
And these women didn't know each other, obviously.
Not beforehand.
Okay.
Right. So
and they still might not know each other. They might have had individual, like, separate, like, interviews with the Salt Lake Tribune. I don't know that they've ever actually met.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm not sure if that's relevant, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not.
But anyway, so from the police perspective, we want, you know, as, like, a member of this community, I want to see something happen. But unless there's evidence and support from the accusers and everyone involved, it's hard for the police to actually put together a case, right?
Yeah.
That'll game. My concern, I guess, is from the university side. And this is, again, we have a lot of questions we have to ask. Title IX is known widely, particularly among sports fans, because it mandates, part of what it does is mandates that there needs to be equal treatment for men and women in the athletics, right? Same number of scholarships and whatnot, which is really good. Like, it's done a lot of good since its inception. But it also handles or addresses how schools address sexual assault accusations and whatnot. And again, there's a lot of minutia to it. There's a lot of details we don't know. It looks like the school received information on at least three of those cases, the three that were students. It looks like it was reported to the school, or it was reported to people who should have reported it to the school.
Yeah.
And according to the Tribune said, based on what they saw, they didn't think the school looked into it. In an interview with Green, he said that the school talked to him once. So there was, like, some, it looks to me like school either looked at the evidence and decided there wasn't enough to pursue it, or didn't take it seriously or something. And that's where the questions come up for me.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to talk to them and find out for sure what happened. And, but then they also have to balance they're trying to balance the privacy and stuff. Unfortunately, that a lot of times prevents answers from being given.
Yeah.
Anyway, so does that kind of make sense what I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, it's a strange situation, and one that you would hope that you wouldn't have to deal with, that you'd hope that would never become an issue here on your own campus. But unfortunately, it has become that. And definitely at this point, we want to, you know, find out all the answers. And I know that you guys are going to work really hard to, you know, get as many as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And to kind of find out, you know, is, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune's report, is it correct? Is that how everything went down? Did the police have a different side that they share, like, this is why this didn't happen and all that? And maybe the details that will make it so it doesn't seem like the police were trying to sweep it under the rug, or the university, or anything like that. You know, all those kind of questions you guys are looking to answer, to my understanding.
Yeah.
And so definitely, go ahead, sorry.
This is, the Tribune's done their work. We're still looking to find more information, I suppose. And so I don't want to make assumptions or like express opinions that haven't been validated, but it seems to me like, I don't know, I'm not sure that there's like some nefarious work.
Yeah, yeah. Here,
you know what I mean?
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. And
it's just the question, like, is this off or whatever? And your point is to go and find out if it is or if it isn't.
Yeah. I think the problem is that this isn't, I mean, it involved a football player. This isn't a football problem. This isn't a Utah State problem. This is a nationwide problem. There's just the way we handle sexual assault on college campuses is not very good. There aren't a lot of clear avenues to report it or whatever. There's not a lot of clear definition of how it's handled. I mean, from the disciplinary side, there's not, you know, oftentimes there's not like trained professionals making the decisions. They, you know, it's a panel of university people looking over it. So there's a lot of, I don't know, there's just a lot that we aren't doing correctly with it. And I think all of those things coming together gives us situations like this that looks really bad and is, assuming all of those accusations are accurate, that's bad. That, like, nothing happens. But there's a lot of stuff involved in this that's causing those situations, putting us in unfortunate positions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this instance of sexual assault is far too prevalent. I mean, it shouldn't happen ever, but it happens way more and doesn't go investigated sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't go reported because people either don't know how or don't feel like it's worth it. Because, like, for example, in the report by the Salt Lake Tribune, you know, it seemed like each one of these girls felt that it didn't matter that they reported it because nothing really has happened yet, as far as legally speaking.
Well, I think the other thing, though, is the reporting chain of command is another thing. Because, and this happens in broader cases than just sexual assault, but it's like you tell somebody, they're supposed to tell somebody else in a university setting. And it's just that can get lost.
Yeah, you know? And someone could forget to do it, and then it gets, like, lost in the midst of everything else. And, I mean, and unfortunately, that sometimes happens.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess it... I mean, obviously, the university has to have its own discipline, but I don't know, should that... I'm just wondering if that maybe should be changed, where do you just go to the local police and have them do the whole thing start to finish if there's going to be a reporting problem on a school's end? I mean, I guess this is getting more territory than just sexual assault, because, I mean, it's like you had the molestation case at Penn State, where there's evidence that somebody knew for a while and didn't report something, but obviously that's maybe getting too broad.
I think some of the concern with that is, like I've been saying, like, legally, a lot of times it's hard to put together a case with a crime like this. You know, there's usually not witnesses, and it's an emotional event for the victim, and so,
and also
they oftentimes don't come forward until the evidence is gone.
Yeah, and if they don't come forward pretty early, there's not going to be any. I mean, there's, like, obviously there's going to be biological evidence, most or some of the time at least, because I doubt that you're going to be able to put a condom on or anything like that. But if you wait because you're scared, you know, that evidence can disappear, like, and there's not a way to prove anything. And unfortunately, that happens a lot, that they do wait, and so they can't have an effective rape kit that they take. And so, yeah, a lot of it, unfortunately, it's hard to get evidence on these, especially if you wait. And that might be the biggest problem facing these investigations on this kind of crime.
It frustrates me because on a personal level, I know people close to me who have experienced sexual assault.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's hard to legally put together cases, but then when we have situations like happened with that Stanford situation that came out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And they actually have evidence and everything, and then he gets off with 3 months. Right?
He's
given 6 months and then gets off early for good behavior. Like, that on a personal level infuriates me.
Yeah, me too.
Because, like, it's such a hard problem to address in a lot of ways. There's so much confusion with it. We're all, like, looking at it in different ways. And I think we all agree, like, hey, we shouldn't have people raping people, right? Like, I don't think there's anyone like, no, we should allow that. Like, everyone's against it. And there's just, we just are not addressing it very well.
Yeah.
And then we have a case like that, and he gets off just because he's got money.
Yeah, and it kind of perpetuates it, because, like, if he were to get a very severe punishment where he's going to be in jail for years, you know, other athletes particularly that are prone to do this kind of thing, and obviously this isn't the majority or anything, but there are some, and the other ones will see that and be like, okay, you know, I'm not going to get away with this. It's not going to be okay if I do this. Because some of them, they have that entitlement that, you know, I'm an athlete, and so I'm going to be fine, and nothing's going to happen because, you know, I'm an athlete, and people will just let me, you know, go free afterwards because, you know, they have, like, a different standard for athletes.
I'm going to butt in here.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how much an impact incarcerating one individual actually has on others. There's a lot of confusion in the in the data.
Yeah.
The point of that is that there's not a clear correlation between, like, if you're hard on people who commit a crime, it doesn't seem to necessarily have an impact on other people who might commit that crime. So from that perspective, I'm not sure that that actually would, like, I'm not sure other athletes would be like, oh, I'm going to choose to not rape this individual because of what I saw. But what it does do, most often, particularly with a crime like this, it's one individual committing multiple offenses.
Yeah.
I mean, we see we've got four women over the course of a year who accused, and who knows if there's more. I don't know. Yeah,
there could absolutely be more.
So it's a serial offense, right? It's the same person. So incarcerated, I'm not sure, would, like, deter other people from doing it, but it would get that individual off the streets, right?
And it would, I think it would start to change the culture as well, though, because at this point, when you give leniency to someone for something like this, which I don't think that leniency should be given, because this is a very serious thing.
There shouldn't be leniency if there's solid evidence.
Yeah.
See, the problem is I'm not sure that there is. Because I think from the school's perspective, they should have looked into it, and I'm not sure they did. But, like, legally, what I read in the Tribune report, I think the police did what they were supposed to.
Yeah.
I don't know that there was anything more they could have done to be with the evidence that I'm assuming they had based on timing, and there was, like, varying amounts of support along the way.
Yeah.
There could have been maybe some more follow up by the police. They hadn't, according to the police reports, they hadn't contacted anyone since January of this year. The Tribune did their report last month in July. So there was about 6 months from the last time they tried to contact anyone. So maybe they should have followed up more. But, like, over the course of 2015, I think the police did everything they were supposed to.
Yeah.
To really address something like this, it is a cultural problem.
Yeah.
And we've used that phrase. And it, like, all levels. Like, I went to Walmart the other day, and I was walking through the parking lot. It was late. It was like 9:30 or 10, right? So it was dark and stuff. This woman came out of the store, came out of the store, got into her car, backed up, started pulling away, and there was a bunch of boys coming from their vehicle toward the store. I was leaving the store, so I was coming toward them. And they were all, like, late high school, maybe early college age, right?
Yeah.
And they were rowdy and talking like boys do, but then they started, like, making comments to each other about the girl in this vehicle, and then one of them, like, went over and was like, hit the window and was like, "Hey, girl, you're pretty," or something, like some catcall.
Yeah.
That's, like, part of the culture, right? That's, like, it's stuff like that. It's, like, this unwanted, like, forcing himself upon her, and I'm sure she was freaked out. I mean, this kid, like, starts smacking her window at 10 o'clock in the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
Trying to catcall. So she pulls away, but then I didn't do anything either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm part of that problem. It's, like, it's all of us, right?
Yeah. And, yeah, but really, like, just with the Stanford thing, I think when they give him leniency, it doesn't help.
No, it doesn't
with the problem at all. And so I think if they are more strict, obviously it's going to, he's going to be paying for the crimes that he committed, and also those that he committed to. If it was just the one girl, or if there were more that weren't reported, they get some closure and they will feel a little bit more safe because he's not out there. And I feel like there has to be kind of, when there is evidence and when you can prove that it happened, you definitely, like, you should not be leaning on them, especially not if it's just because they're an athlete. And unfortunately, a lot of people see it that way, as, you know, athletes are going to get off because, you know, we pay tons of money to watch athletes play all the time, you know, between football and basketball and even baseball and hockey. Like, we pay tons of money for athletes. And so for a lot of people, they hate sports because they see, you know, these rare cases where there's an athlete that is involved with this sort of thing. And if they get off early or whatever, they have leniency, then it's going to perpetuate that, because they're like, oh, it's just because they're an athlete. So obviously it should be all cases, but especially when it's something public like that, you can't be lenient when it's proven that they committed that crime. And when you get six months and then get out early, like you said, for something that is as serious as sexual assault, to me is just unbelievable.
See, in that case,
unfortunately, it is believable, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah. In that case, I'm not sure how much his status as an athlete played into it. I think it leans into other larger socioeconomic discussions. But I agree with you that that does happen. And that this frustrates me. I mean, we're on a sports show, so I guess we should take it in a little bit of a more sports-focused direction. But there's we see it in the NFL, and Ethan, you and I have talked about this too, like how what really matters is how good you are. If Torrey Green was a first-round draft pick, would the Falcons have cut him?
Probably not.
When this came out? I don't know. I don't want to, like, assume things on them. I know if he played for, like, the Dallas Cowboys, he wouldn't have, right? Yeah. They went and assigned Greg Hardy and brought him in after...
After he was...
Just, like, horrific allegations. I mean, Deadspin did some work on it and got the police report, posted the pictures and stuff. Just horrendous, right?
Yeah.
There's just... Stuff like that is very prevalent, and it bothers me that they... But then, on the other hand, no charges were ever... Charges were filed and then removed in Greg Hardy's case. He was never actually convicted of anything.
Yeah.
He was suspended a year by the NFL. He was never convicted of anything. Should that still follow him? That's the question.
And then you kind of wonder...
It's a really hard conversation to figure out. I mean...
And you wonder if the charges disappeared, they weren't, like, brought to trial or whatever because he was an athlete and the person got paid off or threatened or whatever... And unfortunately, that's a large concern. Like, you know, people will be asking the question, like, did the Utah State coaching staff know about it? You know, from what I've read, no. Coach Wells said that he didn't know until very recently, probably about the time that article came out on the Salt Lake Tribune that didn't name Torrey Green.
Yeah, the based first on one. But the wording, I don't think he knew before then.
Yeah.
But if the university knew, even if, you know, the police maybe said that there's not enough here... Should the university have done something like where, you know, you said the NFL suspending Greg Hardy for a year. Should the university have taken its own discipline even without the charges? I guess that's the issue. Cause,
How much did the university know? Mm-hmm. And this is something, again, I need to research. Because I don't want to, Utah State's a good school, right? I think there's good people here. I don't think this was intentional. I really hope it wasn't, like, a cover-up, right? Yeah. And I don't believe it was. My guess is there is a policy, there's a plan, there's steps they follow when they receive reports like this.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't have enough information to follow it along. And that's where, as a representative of the Statesman, those are the questions we need to ask.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Tribune asked those questions or not. It wasn't laid out in the article.
Yeah.
Those are the questions we need to ask. We need to find out. And then, hopefully, in doing so, we can help take another step toward finding a better solution, a better situation for that. Yeah. But I don't think Wells knew. I mean, initially when I heard it, I was like, how does he not know? Like, he knew. But then, like, after, like, going through that article, I combed through it a few times, like, wrote some stuff down to make sure I understood. I don't think he knew. Because if it wasn't invested by the university, really, there's no like, reason to tell... the coach, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to
say? Unless
they,
like, found something. It's like, hey, we have suspicion this person may have done that, and then you punish him, and then you find out later that they didn't actually do it. That's why you always have to be careful. There is that still innocent until proven guilty thing.
Yeah.
And so, the main thing that needs to happen is that the idea, like, it needs to change, like, that people need to understand that's not okay. And just like in the reports, you can read it on the Salt Lake Tribune's website, but it sounded like he thought it was okay because of, you know, his position from the accounts of the victims. But we are pretty much out of time right now. But I just want to end with letting everyone know that if you or anyone you know has been a victim of sexual assault, there is a hotline that you can call 24 hours a day that is 1-800-656-4673, and call that number. You can talk to someone about it. It's anonymous. If you don't, like, because a lot of times you don't want people to know that you personally did it. And there's different information on, you know, there's a website dedicated for USU students in particular. There's the sexual assault and anti-violence information.
And that I'm going to interrupt you there. That, that's where I think I would recommend people turn. Students, the Savvy Office, they have counselors, they have programs, they have, like, legally, according to the Title IX, they work with the students to come up with a situation. They can coordinate with professors to to help. Like, it's a horrific experience.
And so, and they'll give you the information. Office. They'll give you information and help you, you know, come to your own decision what you want to do going forward. And that's, they can help you have counseling and everything else, because obviously traumatic experience, like you're saying. And
that's one thing that I think the school looked good coming through those Tribune reports, is the students went to the Savvy Office and they received counseling. The individual at the office even like went with them to meet with police and help them through it. That's
And so the Savvy Office is in the Student Health and Wellness Center, which is just north of the football stadium. There's a building there where we, as students, have access to free healthcare for anything. But you can also call the office, 435-797-1510, or there's a hotline that is 435-797-7273. It also, it spells out rape if you, if that helps you remember it. So, after 5 o'clock, Monday through Friday, on weekends and on holidays, the hotline is answered by CAPSA, but during the regular hours, it is answered there. So I would encourage anyone that has been a victim or knows someone that has been to seek help, because it's not something you should deal with alone. And so you got these different resources. Call the hotline. If you're here at Utah State, definitely go to this office and have someone help you, because it's a traumatic experience, and you know, I wouldn't wish that on anybody ever. So make sure that you find the help that you need, and find the help for those that maybe you know that need help that haven't really looked for it themselves. But we want to thank you all for listening. We will publish this podcast onto our website in the next few minutes. I will send out a tweet about it. If you have any feedback or anything you want us to talk about maybe in a future episode, you can tweet us at USU Bullpen. And yeah, pay attention to the upcoming content for the Statesman. We'll definitely let everyone know when we have kind of more information or anything, and we'll be posting that on Twitter, so make sure you know, check for that. But I want to thank everyone for listening.